This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. A Fresh Air high point of 1988 was an interview with Randy Newman, the singer, songwriter, and pianist. All of us hoped that someday he'd join us again at the piano in our studio. We were delighted when he accepted our invitation to do that last week before a concert date here in Philadelphia. Some of Randy Newman's best-known songs are Short People, Simon Smith and the Amazing Dancing Bear, I Think It's Gonna Rain Today, Political Science, Sail Away, Baltimore, I Love L.A., and Lonely at the Top. He's also written several film scores. Randy Newman started recording in the late 60s. His latest album, Land of Dreams, came out in 1988. I asked what he's been up to since then.
I've taken time off and actually done nothing, but this time I was working. I did Parenthood and Avalon and Awakenings, and I'd been working for about a year and a half on a show for Broadway, hopefully, based on Faust, and an album which I'm going to make with in my version of Faust, you know, the old story where the Lord and the devil make a wager about whether man is redeemable. In my version, they make the same way to the, but it's a kid who goes to Notre Dame in South Bend. And James Taylor's going to play the Lord, and I'm going to do the devil on this album, and Don Henley will be Faust. So, you know, it's on the geriatric side, but I don't know any young people. Or I'd ask the kid from Nirvana to play. Linda Ronstadt's going to be Margaret. And Bonnie Raitt, Martha, her friend, and Elton John's plays this sort of embittered British angel who does a song.
When do you expect the show is going to be
I have no idea.
Performed? Right.
No idea. As a matter of fact, that's why I'm making an album. You know, I've got all these people who've agreed to do it, and I haven't done anything except the soundtracks, you know, for too long. I mean, I'd like to do more in these final twilight 20 years of my life than in the last 20 years. I'm not happy with the amount of work I've done.
Well, you usually have a few years between records.
Yeah, but there's no excuse for it. No excuse for it. And my work habits are better now. You know, I used to, you know, lie out by the pool in the morning and send my kids off, you know, to school and say, you know, work hard, you know, come on, you know, do well in school. And I was like sitting around, you know, talking to the pool man half the day. So, I mean, it was a bad example.
Well,
They turned out all right.
You had Epstein-Barr for a while, too.
Yeah, I did.
The disease where you have, like, no energy months and years. You're right.
Yeah.
And you can't get a diagnosis. But that's all behind you.
Yeah. Good. 2 years. It went away like it came. Just, it was gone. It was bad. Every once in a while, I have a day where I get up and, you know, my heart rate would, like, be 30-40 beats faster standing up than it was lying down. It was just hard to go from here to there. I feel very sorry for anyone who has it.
So when you haven't had a new album in a few years and people don't know that you're working on a musical, do some people wonder, well, where is he? I think that's
either
something.
They wonder where is he, and then it's who is he. It isn't like the mystique builds up, you know, like Dylan with his motorcycle accident. It's like, oh, who? You know, so it doesn't work for me to like, I'll stay away for a while. You know, I've been overexposed.
Let me ask you to do one of your older songs for us, a song that I think that most of our listeners will know. Would you do Political Science for
us?
We know it as Let's Drop the Big One.
And yeah, hopefully it's never been out of date since I wrote it, but maybe it is now.
Yeah.
Nah, there's a trade war. No one likes us. I don't know why. We may not be perfect, but heaven knows we try. But all around, even our old friends put us down. Let's drop the big one and see what happens. We give them money, but are they grateful? No, they're spiteful and they're hateful. They don't respect us. So let's surprise them. We'll drop the big one and pulverize them. Asia's crowded, Europe's too old. Africa's far too hot and Canada's too cold. And South America stole our name. Let's drop the big one, there'll be no one left to blame us. will save Australia. Don't wanna hurt no kangaroo. We're building all American amusement park there. They got surfing too. Boom goes London and boom Paris. More room for you and more room for me. In every city, the whole world round, will just be another American town. Oh, how peaceful it will be. We'll set everybody free. You wear a Japanese kimono, babe, to be Italian shoes for me. They all hate us anyhow, so let's drop the big one now. Let's drop the big one now.
What a wonderful song.
Thank you.
How did you write that?
I don't know. I think it came fairly quickly. I don't remember the circumstances. Just, you know, there's always been that. This is that sort of xenophobia that's been in the country, that's always been here, always will be, you know, sort of cubed. I mean, almost no one is this nuts anymore, but few people are.
Have you developed a separate sound for accompanying yourself at the piano than you'd use if you were just sitting at the piano alone to play? I mean, do you think of yourself as having a sound that you use when you're singing?
A pianistic sound?
Yeah. I mean, I think of you as having one, but I couldn't explain it.
I don't think of it, but I probably just adjust to what I'm doing, yeah. I have a style of playing, I think, that I can tell it's me, if only because I can't keep time.
Is there a certain kind of left hand that you think of as you or something?
Oh, you know, my son does this imitation of me, you know, without hitting. He goes, you know, it's this. I'm very fond of shuffles. I have been all my life. It seems to be my natural mode of expression. My mother was from New Orleans. I don't know whether that has anything to do with it, but you know. Blue Monday. I hate Blue Monday. Got to work like a slave all day. I mean, that's the stuff I love. And people don't tend to like shuffles that much, you know, and drummers hate them. But I've written more than I should have, you know, so maybe there's something to my left hand.
So when you first got access to a piano, when you were trying to do things that you heard?
As a kid?
Yeah, as a kid.
I never tried to do things I heard. I just played out of the little, you know. The Thompson from a wigwam book at the party. That was getting complicated there. But I never, there was music in my family. And I remember when I was about six, all of a sudden, there was like a piano in my room, you know, just in case I was Mozart, I think they wanted to have this thing looming, an upright, Hoffman upright, looming over me. My dad was a doctor, but he loved show business, you know. Before he went in the army, he went on that Hollywood Caravan tour. One of my uncles conducted that thing during the war, and he was a doctor on that, and I guess he never got over it. But I mean, I think he wanted me to be a musician, though he never admitted it. I mean, what was the piano doing there, you know?
Right.
I didn't know what to do with it.
So did you impress them with your musical skill early on?
Yeah, I did with my ear. You know, they could play a record, and I would name them what it was when I was very young, apparently.
So if you started off playing all these, you know, piano for beginner type
sure.
books, how did you start to learn rock and roll? Did you just pick it up from records? Could you?
I think I did when I was, started 15, 16. A friend of mine suggested, you know, why don't you try and write some songs? His father was in the record business, so I did. And then a publisher signed me up. But it isn't like, you'll hear stories, I worked with Jeff Lynne on the last record, who was with ELO, and a lot of guys listen to a record, it did something to them. It clicked some kind of switch in them where they'd listen and copy the riffs on everything. I never did it. I was pushed kicking and screaming the whole way, it seems like. in the music in some kind of ways. Even when I was in college and people be all, they'd say, oh, did you hear Shostakovich's 11th Symphony? Or I don't know what it was then, about 11 maybe. And I, you know, I hadn't heard, but I was better than everybody at composition classes and stuff like that. Worse at, you know, sight singing and things like that. But there, I was like, I was good at it. I had talent for it.
Were lessons forced on you?
No, but I never always felt I wasn't practicing enough, and I wasn't. I there's no doubt that I have some talent for it, and I probably have developed some of it too.
What?
I know that sounds odd, but
what was the first kind of stuff you started writing at the piano for yourself?
The first thing I wrote was like a summer song. I was 16, 17. They tell me it's summer. It went. But I know it's a lie. Cause summer's for laughing. All I do is cry. Jeez, I don't know whose key this was. But anyway, it was recorded by the Fleetwoods. Man, they tell me it's summer. But I know it's a lie. Cause summer's for laughing. All I do is cry. Things like that, you know. Not really bad, but just vapid.
Randy Newman is with us. More after this short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is singer, songwriter, and pianist Randy Newman. Let me ask you to do another song.
Absolutely.
Is there one you particularly like to do, or Dixie Flyer, or mm-hmm. Emotional Girl, or?
I'll do Emotional Girl. She's a real emotional girl. She wears her heart on her sleeve. Every little thing you tell her, she'll believe. She really will. She even cries in her sleep. I've heard her many times before. Never had a girl who loved me half as much as this girl loves me. It's real emotional. For 18 years she lived at home. She was daddy's little girl. Daddy helped her move out on home. She met a boy. Broke her heart. Now she lives alone. She's very, very careful. Yes, she is. She's a real emotional girl. She lives down deep inside herself. Turns on easy, it's like a hurricane. You would not believe it. Gotta hold on tight to her. She's a real emotional girl.
Is that song about somebody? I mean, somebody, you know?
It's about a bad guy, I think. You know, I mean, it sort of slips by as a love song, but he shouldn't be telling anyone what he knows about this girl, in my opinion. But I let it go. What a beautiful love song. I don't think so. I think he shouldn't say, you know, she turns on easy like a hurricane to anyone else. I've seen her cry in her sleep. What business is that of anybody's? I guess I just can't help myself. I sometimes play the thing from Parenthood, you know, in the show I do, and it's so atypical of my work. It's so jolly, but my doing it it sounds evil, you know, even somehow.
Well, the song from Parenthood, I'd Love to See You Smile.
Yeah.
Wasn't that used for a commercial?
Yeah.
A Colgate, camera or something?
For toothpaste.
Oh, okay. Yeah, see,
I agonized over that for about half a minute.
Well,
I didn't know what to do.
You figured it was worth the money.
It is worth the money, and it wasn't a song that has any sacred, you know, I was trying to sell the movie.
Right.
And that was my job.
It's almost as if it's easier for you to write songs in the character of people who you really don't like.
Oh, I got some sympathy for every one of them. But basically that's sort of true. I wouldn't say I dislike, but I'm more interested in that. No one else does it. I wrote love songs, you know, when I was a kid, but I don't write many now.
Why not?
Well, there's enough of them, and maybe they're harder. You know, maybe I'm shy. I don't know. I'd write one for another person, but I wouldn't necessarily be interested in it for me. It depends. A song like Marie that's in character, I would. It's an odd kind of, probably some sort of psychiatric problem.
Yeah, right. I was going to suggest that.
No, but I figure, I've always said that, you know, if a short story writer or a novelist or a guy in a movie has the latitude not to be me, well, I mean, why can't I be? And I want to say something else.
Can I ask you to do a chorus of Lonely at the Top?
Sure.
I just think that's one of your really kind of fun songs.
I've been around the world. I've had my pick of any girl. You'd think I'd be happy, but I'm not. Everybody knows my name, but it's just a crazy game. Oh, it's lonely at the top. You know what I was noticing since you're sitting right here and I'm singing?
Yeah.
How hard it must have been, unless you're an actor in movies. You know, I was trying to look at you and sing. It's murder. It would be murder to listen, too, you know. I love you, I'll always love you. Jesus Christ.
It's really embarrassing to
I couldn't do it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, you don't know what to do. I don't know what to
exactly,
do.
Exactly, exactly. So are you averting your eyes?
Oh, very much so. I'm afraid. As a matter of fact, I'm glad I can't see audiences. You know, when you do TV, they're lit up. So, you know, you're playing along on Letterman or Saturday Night Live, and you can see the people, and, you know, you see people talking to each other. I'm afraid to look.
Now, I remember from the last interview we did that you wrote that for Frank Sinatra.
Yeah, I did. I thought it really would have been kind of hip if he did that.
Yeah.
And I played it for Streisand, but she said, well, people would believe it. You know, if she sung that, maybe she's right.
Do people believe it about you? Do they think that you're singing?
It depends. Some towns. You know, I used to play it in Philadelphia, strangely enough, where we are, and they wouldn't laugh. They'd think I was at the time, even if there were 12 people in the audience, you know, at a club.
You know, in talking about how you don't usually write the kind of like emotional, sincere song, like your song "Dixie Flyer" is, it's a very personal song. But by the end of it, you're talking about kind of anti-Semitism in a way.
Yeah, a lot of my songs I hope are moving. You know, it's just. I don't know. I had someone ask me, you know, are you going to start writing more personally, like Dixie Flyer is now? And I said, no, I don't think so. I wanted to see if I could do something like that. But, I mean, I don't think my stuff is necessarily deficient in emotion because I'm not the first person in the eye, you know. So I refute your argument. And shoot it down in flames and once again triumph to go on to further triumphs in cities around the country. Not a hard, mean man, but a gentle, understanding man who wishes his private life to remain... I mean, here's what I think. I think you could tell more about me, what I'd be like, just making a guess, coming in the studio and never seen me before, than you could about some of these people who are writing about, well, we made love in the meadow, and oh, I'm going there, over there, and I love you, I'll always love you. I mean, some of those guys are monsters, believe me.
I believe you.
I mean, but you could guess... You'd be pretty right about what I'd be like. I bet you could have guessed, maybe, that I wasn't the ogre that some have painted me. I rest my case. Innocent.
I really regret that we're out of time. I want to thank you so much, Randy Newman, for coming. It's just been wonderful to have you here. Thank you.
It's been good to be here.
Randy Newman is on tour. He performs tonight in Houston, tomorrow in Austin, Friday in San Francisco, and Saturday in Los Angeles. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.